We do have a quorum, and we are ready to begin our meeting. What we have on our agenda today is Senate File 405, and we have Senator Elise Mann here to present Senate File 405. I'll hand it over to you, Senator Mann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have an author's amendment I'd like to incorporate.
Very good. Thank you. Can we have a motion for the incorporation of the author's amendment, the A2 amendment? Thank you, Senator Umu Verbeten. Moves the author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. The amendment is adopted. Senator Mann, to your bill as amended.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate File 405 will prohibit non-compete clauses in contracts. A non-compete clause is a contract between workers and firms that prohibits an employee's ability to work for competing firms. Employers can use these clauses for several reasons. However, the benefits incurred by the employers almost always come at a cost to the workers and to the economy as a whole. A non-compete clause will prohibit a worker from working within a certain geographical area and/or for a certain amount of time after their current employment is terminated. For example, an employee working at a hair salon in Apple Valley will be prohibited from working at any competing hair salon within a 20-mile radius for a year. An employee working at McDonald's cannot work at any other McDonald's or fast food restaurant establishment within a 25-mile radius for 18 months. An insurance executive cannot work for any competing company within a 30-mile radius for 2 years, and so on. Effects of non-competes agreements include a decrease in workers' bargaining power, which leads to lower wages. Non-competes prevent workers from finding new employment, even after being fired without cause. Non-competes stifle the free market. They fracture health and patient care. They hamper innovation. They push people out of their communities. And non-competes sometimes induce workers to leave their occupations entirely, forgoing accumulated training and experience in their fields. Non-competes can be so destructive that the Federal Trade Commission proposed banning non-competes at the federal level. They estimated that by banning non-compete agreements, workers' wages across the country would increase by $300 billion per year and expand career opportunities for about 30 million Americans. The ability to change your job is the core to a competitive and thriving economy. And with that, Madam Chair, we have some testifiers.
Thank you, Senator Mann. All right, to our testifiers, it looks like we have somebody on Zoom, Dr. Hannah Lichtson. Hello, can you hear us, doctor?
I can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you very well. If you could thank you. If you could please state your name, title, and let us know where you're testifying from today for the record, and then we look forward to hearing your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Dr. Hannah Lichtson, and I'm testifying today from Minneapolis. I am a primary care doctor in Minnesota, and I'm here in support of SF 405 because non-compete clauses are actually a major healthcare issue, and I'm hoping to explain to you why. With the modernization of healthcare and the growing complexities of the private insurance market, it's now nearly impossible for physicians to work in independent practice, especially in primary care fields. Instead, more and more doctors are now employees of large healthcare organizations. And as you know, we're seeing frequent acquisitions and mergers of these organizations, which means more doctors now work for fewer employers statewide. Nationally, doctors are about three times as likely as other American workers to have a non-compete in their contract. In 2018, that figure was estimated to be about 45% of all physicians nationally. We don't have specific numbers for Minnesota, but with the growing industry consolidation, it's going up. So, what does that mean for healthcare of Minnesotans? Well, if a doctor who is bound by a non-compete clause wants to separate from their employer, they're trapped. If they leave, they would either have to work a significant distance from their current practice, or if they don't want to uproot their family, they have to take 1 or 2 years away from practicing medicine in their specialty. And that causes real harm in a few ways. First, it makes it much less appealing for doctors to come to Minnesota or to stay in Minnesota for jobs, because many states have already banned the use of non-competes, either universally or specifically for healthcare. We have a severe and growing physician shortage in rural Minnesota especially. According to recent data from the health department here, 1 in 3 rural Minnesota doctors plans to stop practicing medicine in the next 5 years. We need to make it appealing to come work here, and non-compete clauses do the opposite. Second, these clauses actively push physicians out of town. So, for example, a colleague of mine was working as a psychiatrist in a rural Minnesota city with really high need and few options for specialty care. She decided to leave her employer because of professional concerns, but because of her non-compete, is now not legally able to care for the patients in her own community, leaving them without access to a much needed specialist, even though she still lives there. The same thing happens to physicians working in Minneapolis and St. Paul who are forced to find a new job outside of the metro area, again, leaving their patients behind. Which leads to the third, and I think the most important reason that non-competes harm health by disrupting patient care. When a healthcare company uses a non-compete clause, it takes away our ability as patients to continue receiving care from the doctor of our choice, the doctor who knows us best. And this artificial disruption in the doctor-patient relationship can cause real harm. So please vote to eliminate the use of non-competes in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lixon. Next on our testifier list, we have Mr. Kurt Erickson. Hello, Mr. Erickson. Please join us at the testifier table.
Okay.
Please state your name, title, and then we look forward to hearing your testimony. Thank you.
My name is Kurt Erickson. I'm a lawyer from downtown Minneapolis. I work at Littler Mendelson, which is a labor and employment firm that works predominantly on the management side. I have represented both companies enforcing non-competes, and I've represented individuals defending against non-competes. So I've kind of been on both sides of the line of scrimmage, to use a football metaphor. Let me start my comments kind of not where I was going to start, but I'll start there anyway, which is this bill began, as far as I know, both as Senate File 405 and Senate File or House File 295, actually validating the use of non-competes. It said that over a specific median income, non-competes were enforceable. And after testimony a week or two ago, the bill was changed basically to say we're not going to do non-competes altogether. So we start with the proposition here that even with the bill's authors, both in the House and in the Senate, there was a recognition of the value and importance of non-competes in the workplace. And what non-competes really do is reflect the facts that, in fact, there is goodwill that belongs to a company. There is infrastructure and operations of the company, all of which support an employee or prospective employee going out and making a living for both themselves as well as the company. And that's been the law in Minnesota and predominantly still is the law everywhere, with the exception of places like California and North Dakota, and is still the law. So this bill evolved from a partial limitation on non-competes to a complete prohibition on non-competes. And I haven't heard anything in terms of actual evidence with regard to why that is necessary. Specifically, I see this bill as a solution without a problem. Minnesota has traditionally, right up until today, narrowly construed or disfavored non-competes in terms of enforcing them. That's been the law for decades. Minnesota has consistently followed the doctrine of blue pencil. And blue pencil is, for example, to tell an employer, listen, you have a year or 2 year non-compete here. This person was an employee of your organization for, let's say, 3 months and decided to do something else. We're not going to enforce a 1 or 2 year non-compete. We'll enforce a non-compete, perhaps only with regard to a very limited area and a limited amount of time. That, again, has been the law in Minnesota for decades. The idea that blue pencil is suddenly something new and needed, it's not. It's established. It's already there with regard to this. When I had the opportunity to speak with Senator Mann and Representative Elkins, who are the principal authors, I thought that there would be opportunity for clarification of non-compete law. So, for example, instead of using the median family income of 4 as a basis for non-competes, I talked about a specific rate of pay, which would allow companies to employ people at a specific rate and then have non-competes either apply or not apply, which would allow employees the flexibility of being full-time or part-time employees. I talked about clarification in the law with regard to a non-compete has to be offered at the time that a person is offered employment. One of the things that was talked about in the last committee hearing was that people were employed on day one and then given a non-compete to sign on like day 20 or day 30. So they feel like they were, for lack of a better way to say it, schnookered into the non-compete. I think we can clarify that in fact the non-compete has to be offered at the same time employment is offered. I think that there's a basis for saying in Minnesota that non-competes for a person who's progressing through the organization, let's assume they're working as a line worker with no contact with customers, and then they are going into a sales position, a promotion for them. I think there's the ability to say that you can't have a non-compete for that person without offering him or her significant additional consideration besides existing employment. I think there's an opportunity to do that as well. I think you ought to think long and hard about removing a provision that protects employers with regard to the business that they have built up with regard to this. I understand the idea that we should have employees who are mobile, but we also need the ability to protect people who have built up businesses. When I hear comments about hair salons and McDonald's employees signing or having to comply with non-competes, I'm skeptical based on my own practice and not having those people coming to me with regard to non-competes, with regard to enforcement. I'm very skeptical with regard to whether there is an issue out there. And again, I see this as a situation where it's a solution looking for a potential problem. I think that the current language, which is in subdivision 1, which I understand now, you know, we don't have basically, I think it's subdivision 2, so that's gone, talks about restricting employees. I think that the language in there is very ambiguous for purposes of straddling whether or not non-solicitation clauses are in fact enforceable under this law or not. I think it's ambiguous as to whether or not confidentiality clauses for things such as trade secrets are in fact being prohibited or not. The language here about restricts the employee is language, I think, that calls into question those things with regard to this. So I think that the bill needs a lot of work. I think the bill has gone from unacceptable to worse, just to be blunt about it, in terms of going to an outright prohibition. And I think it's a substantial departure from traditional non-compete law. So I'm very concerned that if I'm running a small or a medium-sized business, which is really where this is going to be most applicable, that that business and its goodwill and its capital is going to be endangered by this bill. I was opposed to the bill when it was House File 295 in the present form as it is Senate File 405, and in its amended form, I'm even more opposed. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Erickson. Next on our list of testifiers, we have Mr. Kevin Borowski. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee, Mr. Borowski. I hope I haven't butchered your name. If you could please state your name and title for the record, and then we look forward to hearing your testimony.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Kevin Borowski. My coworkers and I have a problem, and we're looking for a solution. For most of the last decade, I have been a caretaker in a condo in Minneapolis working for First Service Residential. My wife, who also does this work, and I live in the building and do work to make sure everything is running okay and clean and comfortable for the residents. You may have heard my story in the last week, as following my public push to form a union, because of that, I was fired, and now my wife has lost her job too. We are being forced to leave our home in the coming weeks since our home is tied to our job. We are fighting that decision, but I am here today to talk about the salt in the wound that came with this already frustrating and scary event. Caretakers and desk attendants at my company have been forced to sign these non-compete agreements as part of our employment, which means we wouldn't be able to do similar work for a substantial period of time after leaving the company. As one news article asked, was I a scientist with the propriety recipe for a cleaning solution? Was I a holder of a confidential blueprint concealing secret rooms in the condo? The fact that so many workers signed the agreements would be laughable if it wasn't so common. It forces workers to stay at companies instead of taking better offers and hold down people's chances to make a living. It means if you are like myself and my wife and have done something for a decade and you leave the company for whatever reason, you can't do the same work you're most skilled at. It's another way corporations are rigging the system to make sure workers can't. I am happy to say that after my story was in multiple media outlets, my company reached out to let me know they were revoking the non-compete. And I just heard last night that they are telling all of their employees that they are free from this clause going forward. But it shouldn't take a situation like mine to address the issue. I'm thankful you are here taking this on as an issue here in Minnesota and excited to see action at the national level. Please pass this bill and make Minnesota a leader in standing up for working families. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Borowski. Now we'll go ahead and open up the discussion to our committee. Members, do you have any comments or questions for Senator Mann or any amendments? Yes, Senator Liske.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to ask Senator Mann the origin of this bill. What was the problem that came forward, as we know that this bill has existed before this exact story broke out? So I'd like to know where this all came from.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Mann.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Liske. So in 2019, I had some colleagues come to me and say, they were working in Duluth, and there's two hospital systems in Duluth. And essentially, they got pushed out of one system. They couldn't work in the other, so they had to leave Duluth. Duluth is a rural area, needs doctors. They got pushed out. And so in 2019, we wrote a bill to ban non-competes in healthcare. And as soon as I introduced that bill, out of all the bills I introduced that year, this was the one I got the most phone calls on from people working, the examples I gave, people working at McDonald's, people working at hair salons, executives at companies, people from every spectrum of the employment chain called me and said, this happened to me, I can't work in my town, can you ban it across the board? And I said, absolutely. So I wrote a bill in 2020 to ban it across the board, and then COVID came, and none of the bills went anywhere. So this year, I picked up the bill again, and I mistakenly picked up the wrong copy that had the wage limit in there, which I absolutely do not agree with, because this is happening to low-wage workers and high-income workers, and it's impacting everybody across the board. High-income workers do have more non-competes than low-income, but I feel like it's an unfair practice that impacts everybody. And so the first thing I did was make the amendment to remove that wage and essentially bring it back to where the bill was in 2020 when I first had it.
Thank you. Any follow-up, Senator Liske?
Yes. So, Madam Chair, Senator Mann, the next question I have is more in my line of work and in some other lines of work, which we'll get into here in my discussion. My line of work, I'm a chiropractic office, right? I'm a chiropractor. I own my own clinic. Perfect example of a non-compete that we would see in our profession is in the sale of a clinic. It's pretty common to have private clinics go from one profession or one doctor to another. And in a non-compete situation, they're necessary to avoid any misguided or terrible sales, right? So an example would be I sell my clinic, which then includes my patient list, to a professional that comes in and is brand new to the area. They're not used to the profession, they're not used to the area, but hopefully they've worked and learned some of the patients. But the issue becomes, I decide instead, I don't really want to move after all, I'm going to stay here, I'm going to open my clinic up down the street. In this case, that would be a huge violation of the contract because you sign a non-compete. It makes the value, I basically just swindled somebody a whole bunch of money out of their pocketbook to purchase my clinic, and now they can open up shop right down the street. That's not a good option. So that's something that I would like to know why that's not covered in this discussion.
Senator Mann.
Madam Chair, Senator, very good question. So we did not cover that because, again, we're just starting the bill off at the baseline where non-competes do not exist. North Dakota did the same thing, but they did make an exception for when a company is sold. So I am more than happy to have conversations with you about that. This is not the only stop for this bill. So I'd be happy to talk to you about that and see what we can do.
Thank you, Senator Mann. And I would also note that there is a clause in the bill as amended. I'm going to say where it is in the bill. We're unamended. It's on page 2, line 11. I mean, that if there are other parts of a contract that are not specifically a non-compete provision. So if there are protections for client lists, if there's non-disclosure agreements of other kinds, that this provision says that nothing else would be unenforceable just because this is unenforceable. Yeah. So just to note that. But any other response, Senator Liske, any follow-up?
Sure. So to follow up with that specific comment that you just made, I understand that. And as we heard, the covenants not to compete are generally a blue pen. The judge gets to rule whether they're in order or out of order or they're within means, right? So perfect example, my dad purchased a clinic in 1997. The provider decided that she was going to move to Shakopee, which was outside of the covenant not to compete, which is fine. But then she decided to open a clinic within the area of the 25-mile radius. She opened the clinic. Patients went from my dad's clinic to her because they had been used to her. The judge ruled in her favor in the fact that it was close enough to the boundary that it didn't matter. It wasn't in effect. So they basically ruled the covenant non-effective. But another example to that I want to bring up is, for example, there's dog trainers. They train dogs for hunting purposes, things like that. The employee signs a non-compete clause. Basically, this employee's never been a dog trainer before. They come in, they learn how to train the dogs over the course of a couple years. They sign a non-compete that says 1 or 2 years. A lot of times they work for the company for 5 or 6 years. They take that experience and they move. Well, a lot of times these covenants become non-enforceable because they've been working for the company for a long enough time. The judge decides that they've fulfilled their agreement. The first 2 years they learned how to become a dog trainer. They didn't leave the company. They stayed for a while. They provided the income that the person hired them for. That fills the void. And so that's why writing this in, now in theory that employee could come, learn how to train dogs, open a dog training facility just down the street. And so that's something that I'm concerned about, and that's why I'm addressing these concerns. By avoiding all non-competes, you're removing pretty significant value. Now, of course, I'm not speaking directly to all of the minimum wage things we're concerning ourselves with. I'm not trying to say that the hospital situation obviously is concerning, but did we talk to a judge about it? Did we ask why are they not allowed to? Okay, they're in Duluth here, but they're going way down the street. Why can't they work down here? What is the difference? And those are things that I think the judiciary branch is available for, is for these discussions. So that's my concern there.
Thank you, Senator Liske. Any further discussion? Yes, Senator Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I got a question for the attorney. If he wants to come forward.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Yes, so, Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, if you could expand a little bit, you know, the concern that we had testimony on was from a medical practice standpoint. If there's a non-compete and the person goes to work for a different clinic, what is the judiciary, I mean, how does that work? Is there a penalty imposed or, you know, I mean, I just never seen one of these litigated where there was a penalty on a non-compete. I own an independent insurance agency, and there's a lot of non-competes in insurance, especially by closed companies. And yet I've seen these agents leave or get fired or whatever, and they go work for another insurance company. And even though they signed a non-compete, nothing ever happens, as far as I know. So if you'd like to address that.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson.
Yeah, I guess my response with regard to that is, if I'm in, let's assume that I'm out in Wilmer or I'm out in Fargo-Moorhead or I'm out in Marshall, and the court would consider under the blue pencil doctrine whether or not it's going to enforce an agreement that precludes the community from, for example, getting psychiatric care or getting some other type of medical care from a person who has left the clinic. I think the circumstances under which the employee has left the clinic or the doctor has left the clinic will play a role. So for example, if in fact the doctor has left the clinic involuntarily, but is otherwise, you know, in good stead and with the Board of Medical Practice, et cetera, I think courts would be reluctant to enforce that agreement for as long as it, you know, for 1 or 2 years. They may enforce it for a shorter amount of time. My general sense is that, and I haven't had a doctor non-compete, so I'm speaking based on my understanding of the blue pencil doctrine, that there's an opportunity there to narrow the non-compete through the courts.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. And I'll just note also that the next stop, as I understand it, for this bill is to go to judiciary.
Okay.
So I want to allow us a little bit of latitude to sort of speculate about how this would be applied in the courts. If we have a little bit of a discussion, that's fine. But I don't want us to get too far afield of the jurisdiction of, yep, that we're looking at here in the Labor Committee and how this would affect working people. So, but any follow-up? Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'm just saying, let's say that the judge or whatever rules in favor of the non-compete, what's the consequence? I've never seen any consequence ever imposed.
There's generally two consequences.
Mr. Erickson?
There's generally two consequences, Senator. One is that the court will be asked to enjoin the doctor from practicing in violation of the non-compete. The other, which is far less likely, is that the court will enforce the non-compete by awarding damages to the clinic who's enforcing it. Okay. Part of the reason that the injunction or enjoining of the doctor would be more likely is that damages are very difficult to ascertain in non-compete cases.
Yeah.
So there would be some some prospect of the court enjoining for probably a smaller amount of time or a narrower area with regard to this. And then I just wanted to, in that context, address the issue with regard to nothing in this subdivision shall be construed to render void or unenforceable other provisions in the agreement. I don't think that eliminates the danger from use of restricts the employee in subdivision A. I think that's still there, and I think that's still a problem.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson, for your opinion. We'll perhaps leave that discussion to the Judiciary Committee. Any further discussion or questions? Yes, Senator Umar-Verbeten.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Senator Mann. I just wanted to make a few comments in support. I think that our lowest wage workers are hit by this the hardest. And I know there was a study after Oregon passed their ban in 2008 that their hourly paid workers had their wages increased by 2 to 3% on average. And then thinking about how lowest wage workers and hourly workers are hit the hardest, then we know there's gonna be a racial and gender gap issue. And there's also been studies showing that can help close that gap from anywhere from 3.6 to 9.1%, which is very important. Just in general, there's an unlevel playing field between workers and employers. I think a lot of workers don't necessarily know all the legal doctrine or have the space to take this to court. And we've seen other states do this with success, so I think we should follow their lead.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Kubek.
Thank you, Chair. Mostly I just have a comment because this is actually one of those areas that I have some firsthand experience at. Having lived in Minnesota but worked in North Dakota for the last 20 years, and interestingly enough, the employer there, despite the fact that they couldn't do it, would put in non-compete clauses into my contract. And not only for working in the Fargo-Moorhead area where I was living, but they also threw in Duluth because, well, they owned a TV station in Duluth, so they didn't want me going there to another TV station. And they threw in Sioux Falls because they owned another TV station in Sioux Falls. So you can see how this can ripple out. And particularly in the media aspect, there's a lot of consolidation, and it was pretty commonplace that they would start throwing in, well, you can't work for this company that has stations all across the country. So as that, and they would use it somewhat as an intimidation factor. A lot of new employees did not know the fact that even though they put that in there, it was not enforceable. There would be no way that they could enforce that. Then they tried to get more creative, and because the parent company, the majority ownership, was actually based in the Twin Cities here in Minneapolis, then they tried to put us under Minnesota law, even though we were conducting all of the work in North Dakota, which I thought, well, they'll never get away with it. I signed the contract anyway, but that was a non-compete clause. So I've had a lot of experience with these, and it's not been favorable for the workers, and they have used it in a way to intimidate them and keep them from not being able to move on and advance further in their career. Then I got elected to the Senate, so it doesn't matter now. The voters have that right on me to repeal me, so.
Thank you, Senator. Any further discussion or comments? Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I want to turn to Mr. Brodsky and thank you for coming. Thank you for the work you do for our most vulnerable, so thank you for that. And I am happy to hear that the business is working with you, so grateful for that. And so I do see a problem. And then again, it's happened so quickly that we get this bill that, again, I haven't been reached out to or talked to. And so I get the bill. I'm trying to understand it. And I continue to ask for some dialogue so we can know a little bit more about the bill. I know that's what I did when we were in the majority. So disappointed that, and I have to quickly try to get the information. I watched the House hearing as I found out, you know, that it was coming. And it's still a lot to take in amongst all their other schedules, right? We're all busy, and it's hard to be an expert. And we're not experts. That's why I like to turn to the experts. And I haven't heard a lot of thank you, Mr. Erickson, for coming also, because you are an expert. And there's always that point and counterpoint that we need. And I need it because I like to hear both sides. And as a legislator, our job continues to be being able to not put a scale on one side or the other. And this is the labor and industry committee. And I've heard that, I've said it every time, I think, that I've spoken, that delicate balance between labor and industry and the importance of both sides and trying to keep that, as far as government, to be fair in that and to look at both sides always. So I haven't had enough time to look at the other side yet, so I appreciate the testimonies. At this time, I don't have enough information to be able to support the bill. I'm not saying that I don't, but I can't vote for something that I don't know enough about. And I see that, and almost from what the little testimony I've heard, that there's some things that businesses do need to be protected in some certain instances. And again, going with the one size fits all, it's just not a good policy. And I've seen it quite a bit here, and it's a little frustrating. So I appreciate you bringing the bill. I think there's some things that we need to attend to. Disappointing that now we're just going to make it a broad brush and say, okay, we're just going to get rid of them all. So and I believe in business. Most businesses are good people trying to make a living. They work hard. And they're not mean. There's always those that are out there that do that, and sorry for that. I mean, I feel bad for workers that have to put up with that. But that's where we need to step in and address those issues. So again, I look forward to the discussion, and my door is always open. I'd love to talk to you about some of the other bills that have already came through the committee. That are very important to the district that I serve, and they're very concerned. And I'm hearing a lot of pushback from my district about a lot of the bills that have come through this committee. So I will voice my concern and their concerns to address some of those issues. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dornick. Any further discussion, members? Senator Grünhagen, briefly.
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah. I guess I'd parrot some of the comments by Senator Dornick, but also if you could add some clarifying language in here in terms of what was addressed by Senator Leeske, the sale of a business and opening something right down the street. I can see that happening with insurance or chiropractic or something like that. So, you know, on the sale of a business would be different than as far as an employment. You know, the other thing, going to court and enforcing a non-compete to me is going to cost a lot of money, okay, and time. So I don't know, see a lot of these companies paying somebody $20 an hour who maybe have somebody sign a non-compete being willing to do that unless they're really losing something. On the other hand, if we have just a blanket non-compete like this bill is, I do have a little bit of concern, rightly or wrongly, that some technology companies that have, you know, industry-specific sensitive data would like the option of having something for the employees who are accessing that, and it could have a major detriment to their business. So I guess I'd like to see a little more flexibility in here, and also a possibly a income or a hourly cap that where it wouldn't apply, which I just don't think most companies are going to spend the time or money on a like a McDonald's or anything else if the person goes to work for Burger King or something like that. But anyway, those are my thoughts. So for right now, too, I'm probably going to vote no. But appreciate if you could address some of those areas. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Gruenhagen. And before I pass, I will pass it to you, Senator Mann, to have the last word. Do we have another comment? Yes, Senator Wiesenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't going to comment, but then after he brought up a point, I thought maybe you could have some type of small business protection if you are like a startup, so you don't have people leaving and taking your property. Just something to think about, I guess, you know, for him. And, you know, my wife is working on starting a small business right now, so it'd be something that we want to hire someone and they leave and go across the road. Just something to think about. I'm not saying this is bad. I just need to look at it more. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And Senator Dornick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just forgot that we had a testifier online, too, so I wanted to thank Dr. Lixon, I hope I got that right, for her testimony and for her work in as a doctor. So thank you for the work that you do, too, and thank you for testifying. And I'd like to call for a roll call, too.
Thank you, Senator Dornick. A roll call has been requested. A roll call will be granted. Senator Liske, do you have a...
Can we get that reported in the journal as well, just to...
Do we have... thank you for the request. Do we have three people requesting, and we do, that it will be printed in the journal? The request has been made, and we will do that. We will report the vote, the roll call in the journal. So I would just like to take my chair hat off for a moment and offer my own comments on this bill. I want to thank you, Senator Mann, for bringing this forward. I also echo the thanks to all of the testifiers that we have had to tell us about their opinions on the bill and their bringing their own knowledge and their own experiences to bear so that we could all hear that in this committee. You know, I one thing that I'm really struck with as we have this discussion and we hear from testifiers is that for me, a lot of this comes down to the imbalance of power that exists between a working person and a business owner or a boss of a large corporation, especially. When we're talking about disputes between a worker, I'll talk really loud. I don't have an inside voice. Okay, so when we're talking about a worker who is who has any kind of a dispute with a large corporation or even a local business owner, there are many points in that relationship of power disparity where the employee, both at the time of entering into the contract or during the course of any dispute or at the time that an employee leaves that employment for whatever reason or post already having left has a dispute, the employee is at a distinct disadvantage in terms of power and resources. I can't tell you the number of times when I have had to make reference, for example, to employees up in the Duluth area who have some sort of a dispute with their employer and need some legal advice about that. We have to refer people down to attorneys in Minneapolis because there are several attorneys up in Duluth, but none of them practice employment law. And it's a real problem. It's not as if some employee can, one, have the power to assert entering employment that this part of the contract, I'm not going to sign that. That's just not how it works. And especially if you're working at a lower wage job, but even for those people who are working at higher incomes, it's sort of a take it or leave it type of situation. So I do applaud the efforts that are being put forth in this bill to sort of level that playing field a little bit, just so that we actually do have a sense of that you can't be taken advantage of in contract language in a sort of tricky way. And I also want to note for our members and for the record that we do have supportive testimony that was offered in the form of a packet from the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis with a bunch of information about these types of clauses and contracts and the negative effects that they have on the economy and on workers. And then also we have a letter of support from Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison's office. And then there's also an article that details a little bit more about Mr. Borowski's situation that Ms. Borowski was dealing with. So with that, I'll go ahead and turn it over to you, Senator Mann, for the last word, and then we will go ahead and take the roll call vote for the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'll just like to piggyback a little bit on what you said, in that someone working at a fast food restaurant, they're going to sign a non-compete, and they're not going to know whether or not it's enforceable or not in the court of law. But they will abide by it because very unlikely that someone making $15 an hour is going to take McDonald's to court, right? So it sets up that restriction right off the bat where employees don't know that there's recourse and don't have the means to get it. The other thing is that the definition of a non-compete is quite clear, and it does not have anything to do with proprietary information, trade secrets, all of those things. Those states were generally will be under like a non-disclosure agreement or another part of the contract, so that does not touch upon those things. So I just wanted to be clear. Aside from that, Senator Umu-Verbaeten stole my closing. So I will just finish with non-competes in general harm competition in the labor markets by blocking workers from pursuing better opportunities and preventing employers from hiring the best available talent. So it goes both ways. They limit the ability of workers to negotiate wage increases or find the best job for them. And by doing so, non-compete contracts limit our economy's potential. In summary, non-competes hurt workers and they hurt the economy. And so I request your support today. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Mann. Members, would someone like to move that Senate File 405 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Senator Umu-Verbaeten moves the Senate File 405 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. We will a roll call has been requested, so we will take that roll call and it will be recorded in the journal. Please take the roll.
Senate File 405, Chair McEwen.
Yes.
Hochschild.
Yes.
Dornick.
No.
Kupak.
Yes.
Grunhagen.
No.
Liske.
No.
Marty. Umu-Verbaeten.
Yes.
Pappas.
Yes.
Wiesenberg.
No.
Five yes, four no.
Thank you. With five in favor and four against, the motion passes. Thank you very much, Senator Mann. Thank you, committee members. That concludes our business for today in the Senate Labor Committee. We are adjourned.
Good to meet you.